I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Rich and I aren't really the contemplative types. Most of our thoughts are shaped by what is to come rather than what has been.
But our futures are inevitably shaped by the past, the moments of failure and, well, triumph.
Speaking about failures is easy. Speaking about the moments you're proud of, though, it's not very British, but there are lots to be learned from those moments.
So today, we're speaking about moments we're proud of from our careers, and most importantly, what we've learned from them. From Joe's 8 years in marketing and my 97 years in marketing. Joe, you're a dick. Yes, I am old. Joe, did you actually know it's my birthday today?
Is it?
It is my birthday. This is a birthday episode. And there you are being mean to me.
Well, now you're 98 years old, so you're 98 years of marketing experience. Congratulations, dude.
Thanks, mate. I've forgotten more about marketing than you'll ever know.
Amazing. That's so funny. Well, happy birthday, man.
Thanks, mate.
I'm Joe Glover, founder of The Marketing Meetup, a global community that connects and educates over 20,000 marketers in the most lovely way possible. Everything we do it to put the human beings we help first.
I'm Richard Wood. I lead the marketing agency Six & Flow. I've worked in marketing for around 19 years now, and I'm a massive believer in that marketers should be trying to engage with people on a human level, not just treating them as leads and numbers in a spreadsheet.
Well, with your 98 years of marketing experience, Rich, and speaking about how we've done things well is quite difficult because it doesn't feel very British and it does feel quite boasty. I figured I'd just pass the gauntlet over to you, you know, just with the first task. So what do you look back on and feel proud about in the context of your career?
Just but on the context of like how you've asked that question with like it doesn't feel very British to kind of pat ourselves on the back type stuff. Yes, but I also like the way I think about it as well is like every single campaign that we've ever put out, regardless of the results, I'm always like, yeah, but we didn't quite do this bit, or like it could have been better if we did this. So I think there's almost that analytical bit eye that goes, yeah, it was good, but it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be, or which I think is just some self-flagellation, which is probably very British. But I think that comes back from, like, I had a design teacher when I was at university, and his view on everything was that if you can't look back at the work you did 6 months and going, yeah, I could have done that better, then you're not progressing. There's, like, you're missing something with what you're doing. You're not moving on from where you were 6 months ago. So I think, like, if you look back at our historic campaigns, we've got new tools now, we've got new team members, we've got processes, everything, and we understand the markets better than we did back then because we've got even more time in them. And now I'm like, oh, yeah, but if we'd known this now, then it would have been so much better. So I think that's where a lot of this, like, distaste for me comes from when we look at the campaign. So you asked me to pick a couple, and I've picked ones that actually I like them because of we pushed the boundaries for either we pushed the boundaries for where they were at the time, or we've done something that I found incredibly enjoyable to work on.
Nice. I like that. No, that's a good way of thinking about it. I think, you know, you're spot on that. Well, first of all, that I think we'll always be incredibly hard on ourselves as well, because I think that's just how we're built. You know, and I wouldn't treat a best friend like I treat myself. But I also think that's been a driving force going forward. So spot on that point, point well made. And what is your first one nonetheless?
So a few years ago, we rolled out a conversational marketing campaign for a high net worth art gallery based in London. And it was, so at the time, conversational marketing and Drift were like very new to us, but it was a client that was, we'd had incredible results for them across inbound, paid media, marketing automation. So all of that had been rolled up already. So there was a lot of trust in that that advisor space, that they're willing to listen to us, willing to take a gamble on ideas. So we had taken on conversational marketing for us. We'd been playing around with it, but this was our first client that we properly rolled it out for. Now, they sell high-grade art. So, like, the different categories of art, but, like, they sell blue-chip art. So there were some Picassos and Banksys and that kind of stuff. So investment-grade stuff. So high-ticket items. But what they were finding is quite often you would have... They moved away historically from data buying, bashing the phones. That was the model that they originally had. And we came in with inbound, which blew their mind. They're like, what, people are actually going to come to us? And like, yep. And we went through that and they started to understand that. And then we brought in conversational and we're like, look, all you need to understand is we're going to have people who are in a buying, inquisitive frame of mind on your site. And at that particular time, we're going to try and connect them with your salespeople. And they're like, this is never going to work. So we'll try it, but it's never going to work. But you have to split test it. Yeah. That campaign over, I think, over 2 years added $5 million to their bottom line. They're directly attributable to conversational marketing. Like, it was phenomenal to the point where their sales team, who were originally like, this is going to be complete shit, were then scrambling over who could get to the leads first. Because what they wanted was a hungry sales team where they had a rule of thumb in that the first person to get to it claims it. They didn't want rotation. They just wanted first to it gets it. So they created this hungry pool of sharks that just smashed through it. And so coming towards the end of this campaign, well, like the client relationship, they changed their CEO and CEOs come in and they're like, we want to do things in like their way. And great, happens across agencies. Like, we understand it, it's not a problem. And he came in and was like, what is this drift thing? Like, what is this cost we're paying for? And he's like, I'm going to get rid of it. And I was like, look, we're moving away from the client anyway, but I want you to know that over the last 2 years, this has accounted for over 10% of your revenue. And the cost associated to it is very minimal and your team are using it effectively. But if you want to remove it, your call. And they are still using it today.
Are they? Yeah. And what did you sort of like take away from that? So, you know, the things I hear that you sort of say there is an inquisitive but maybe slightly dubious client, a new implementation, having sort of like the jubilation of the, like a direct ROI. I mean, when you look back on that, what would you say is like the big couple of lessons, if there are any, from that period of time?
So the biggest lesson out of that, I mean, there's fucking tons of lessons out of it, but like the biggest lesson out of that is if you have a client who is skeptical, you have to go down that process of land and expand. So pick an individual or a small team within their sales team and turn them into the rock star champion. So get somebody who is receptive to new things, new technology, teach them the process, make their numbers look amazing, not like by fudging the numbers, but like actually giving the tools to be able to hit new numbers. And then everybody else sees that and they come across the line. So you pick somebody who is going to be almost like a Trojan horse internally, who's going to help drag it across the line.
Yeah. So you, in that paragraph, it's a very good point, well made, but you did just say land and expand, Trojan horse and a rock star champion. So I think we're just reminded everyone that we are doing a marketing podcast as well.
Yeah, but I get points for buzzwords. All right, dickhead. What is your proudest moment?
So my first one was about messaging, targeting, and the power of culture. So, you know, I don't need to go into the story of the marketing meetup. You know, hopefully if people have listened to this podcast or know about the marketing meetup through the website and stuff like that, they'll know the history of the group. But the thing about community is that really when you start something, then it's just you, but then it becomes a group effort over time. You sort of pass on the baton to the group and say, well, these cultural values that we've started from the off, well, they're not mine, they're ours. And really the greatest example that I remember doing once was at an event in Cambridge, and Cambridge being one of the biggest events. So, you know, there was like 120 people in the room or something like that. And one of the regulars walked up to me and she gave me a hug and then sort of said hello. We were having a nice chat. And then all of a sudden I sort of saw this, her eyes sort of drift over to a chap who stood in the corner by himself looking a little bit nervous. And it was in that moment that she sort of said to herself, say hello. And say hello being one of our values that we encourage folks to do at the beginning of every event. So she sort of said, say hello. And then she walked over to the person and introduced herself. And like, it was just such a lovely, lovely moment for me because, you know, all of a sudden this thing that I'd been saying to people again and again and again, well, I was able to see it in the human behavior. I was able to see someone who's sort of taken that value from themselves, from my mouth and my brain and what we're putting out as communication and sort of make it their own. And that felt powerful in like a really sort of profound and really quite lovely way that you can encourage folks to sort of do good things, and they do if you create the right space. So really that was a lesson about sort of messaging, about bringing the right people into the room, and also about sort of creating a culture that creates something that is welcoming and accepting of lots of different people.
So you've got core values, right? And you share those core values with your community.
Mm.
We have core values as a business, and obviously we share those with the team, we hire against them, we fire against them, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But every quarter, and actually every week, those core values are reinforced or reminded, and we're like, we outline what they mean and how we should be using them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have to do that within your community? How are you reinforcing those values? How are you promoting those values?
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that, like, I think there has become a point where, like, those values are intrinsic to how folks communicate within the group. So over the, you know, if you go into a marketing meetup event, be it online or in person or in the Facebook group as well, there is a certain way that people choose to speak. So immediately there's a reinforcement through the community that folks have sort of said, you know, this is the way that we are going to address each other, and therefore that becomes the norm. So anyone coming into the group all of a sudden sort of accepts, or at least observes, that this is the way things are here, you know, and there's almost like a, it doesn't need to be implicitly stated in those circumstances, because it's just obvious. But then there are other things. So for example, in the Facebook group, then we have some moderating questions that when folks try to join the group, then they have to answer a series of questions in the affirmative to sort of say, you know, I accept these group norms, you know, and I'm going to come in with that foot forward. And if they don't, then they're just removed from the group. Same with the online events. At the beginning of every event, I'll sort of say, three lessons or three things that we want to take from the event is that we learn something new, the chat feature stays alive, and it's a group effort that we sort of share and publicize it. So again, that's sort of another sort of reinforcement at the beginning of every event that we do, just to say, you know what, we're coming together. And then there's also a third way, which is through the messaging. So whether it's through sort of the positively lovely slogan, which is sort of like something that is sort of black or white, you either like it or you don't like it. I think folks sort of either opt in to the group off the basis of that message, or, you know, just choose not to engage. And I think that's been really, really important. I think the last thing that is interesting is that in this past week, we've had some coverage from like some significant blogs who have bought in some traffic from places that wouldn't have otherwise sort of been part of the community. And interestingly, as folks have sort of come into the community as new people, then we've seen like a different type of person sort of come into the community and start posting. And interestingly, you know, these folks aren't getting as much engagement because they're doing things in a certain kind of way, which means that like over the course of time, they're going to think, oh, well, it's not worth posting anymore because, you know, I'm not getting anything off the back of it. And it's because they're looking to take first. So I think, you know, this culture that has been built up over the course of time, all of a sudden, you know, folks are sort of reinforcing it themselves through their actions. And we just need to do those little prompts over the course of time as well.
So it's interesting. You just talked about take first there. So yeah. I am part of, like, we're currently building an alliance of partners to help us like service globally. And what we're doing with that is part of the principles that we've built that around are give first. And you have to subscribe to that process of give first, see what you can do to help grow everybody. Like because if everybody's growing, then everybody wins out of it. But if you approach it with like, what am I getting out of this? it just doesn't work. I think, yeah. And that's, for me, communities, the best communities are built out of that, what can I put into this rather than what can I take out of this?
100%. Like, just spot on. It almost needs nothing extra adding to it, because, you know, that sort of attitude of giving first, that is what community is about. And whether it's in a corporate context or a personal context, I think it's actually more useful to look at it from a personal context first, try and learn those lessons, and then apply it in the corporate world. So, for example, if you're part of a cycling club or a football club or whatever, you know, people don't come with the attitude of, what can I take from this? They come from the attitude of, what can I give to this? So there's really no reason why, when we step into a business world, just because money is involved, that we should change the sort of substance and value of community away from that place of looking to give, because it just doesn't work. And inevitably what happens is that people have a crap time and they don't come back to that particular community. So I couldn't agree more, you know, and so really taking the example of the personal context, applying it in a corporate context, is so, so important with community. And that's something I'm really super passionate about, actually, because I see so many people get it wrong. But, you know, inevitably what happens is they just think community doesn't work for business. It absolutely does, but you have to do it the right way.
Joe, do you know what's just dawned on me? You are basically the British marketing equivalent of Ted Lasso.
I don't know who Ted Lasso is.
Look it up, Joe.
Should I be looking up and get offended on the call?
Or no, the dude is positively lovely. That is his MO.
Nice. I'll look him up. Nice. I can see it's now on Netflix. I'm going to watch that later. Good. Number two for you, Rich.
So it's another drift one, but from the other side of the spectrum. So, and this is actually how you and I met, and I'm not putting this on the list because you and I met. So we've been a Drift partner. So we were part of their original batch of partners, I think in like 2016 or 17, something like that. And they came to us in 2019. Yeah, they came to us in 2019 and asked us, could we help them grow into EMEA? And like so this is one that like we got, it was exciting to be part of, because obviously Drift over the last few years have built a hype machine around like the obviously you've got like the hyper growth conferences, you've got that whole persona of it being something exciting to be part of. So we helped them with a mix of like physical events, so all over EMEA. So we did London, Dublin, Copenhagen, Oslo, where else did we go? Amsterdam. So I think that was the first batch of cities that we did, and engaged people locally using ahead of the time digital kind of outreach marketing, targeting people who were either potential partners, who were partners, or who are the right kind of customer fit. We targeted them along to an event and then kind of wrapped up digital services around all of it. And it was fun to be a part of, and it had some real impact. Like, it helped build a footprint for Drift ahead of them moving into the EMEA space. And we got to do a lot of cool stuff, meet a lot of cool people, and really kind of push the boundaries of what we did. And like, that's where you and I met, and kind of we were working alongside you and working alongside Mark Killens, and that for me was one of those things that solidified that there is something incredibly powerful when you couple physical with digital, because it's a lot harder to disengage and it's a lot easier to feel like you are part of something when there is a physical element to it. And I think that's, we came off the back of that. We're about to do another round of them just before COVID hit, and off the back of that, obviously that kind of kiboshed those plans because we couldn't do digital anymore, physical anymore. And I think that was where a lot of like the energy immediately sucked out, because we were like, oh, we were doing this really cool, exciting thing, and now that's gone. But the biggest learning out of that was couple things with like digital and physical go so well together. And I think a lot of people forget that, particularly in ABM campaigns. So if you can run a digital and direct mail type campaign, great. But couple it with a digital physical event as well, because the impact you'll get from that you will win business, as long as your event's not shit, obviously.
No, I think you're right. I mean, it's funny, I think you're being a little bit generous in sort of saying that I worked with you on it, because I remember speaking with Mark about it, and at one point, you know, sort of like almost applying for the role of doing it. I'm so glad that you sort of like ended up taking the lead on that, because what you delivered was phenomenal, and like there was no way that I was going to reach the level of what you did at that time. You did such a phenomenal job with that.
Thanks very much. I mean, you did send out an email to your list. We got a few people along, and you personally got the wrong date, but other than that, it was fine. I remember clearly.
Yeah. That's so funny. I'd forgotten about that, but you're right. I mean, but you're spot on. So out of interest, I mean, there is something on the ABM front, which is like, I could imagine a beautiful flow, like, you know, a nice handwritten letter to a dinner for whoever, followed up by a landing page, you know, which is thanks for coming, you know, Rich.
We did one better, because, you know, the conversational marketing book, Drift's book, key target, we sent that with a handwritten note out.
Nice.
And like, if somebody sends you, I mean, you get into the whole kind of reciprocity rules. Somebody sends you something like that, you're like, yeah, I should probably go to this, because they put some effort and they've gifted me and like shit like that. And it's powerful, particularly when it's put in the context of it is part of a wider machine. Like, have this book, we'd love you to show up, but there's no hook to this. You don't have to give the book back if you don't come. And then we also use the books at the events to start engagement, getting people asking questions. So every one of these events, we took like 30 odd books. And then like every time somebody asks a question, you get a book. And then people start going, oh, shit, if I brave up and say, yeah, I'm gonna ask this question, I'm gonna stick my hand up, I'm gonna get a book. It's so much easier to get that momentum going.
That's so interesting. I'd love to be an ABM person. It sounds like such a cool job, because you're just about people you know, I mean, not that the rest of marketing isn't, but it's such a direct, personalized sort of thing where you can really put the thought into individual people to you know, doing something special for them. It sounds like a really, really cool job.
My goal in marketing, do you know when I'll be happy to retire, right, is... And I've pitched this idea to so many clients, often tongue in cheek, but they think I'm not being serious. But I want a client to let me stick a billboard, a personalized billboard, outside one of their key contacts. Nice. Like that's what I want. I want to. Like, obviously, you don't have an office, but like if you were in an office, I want a big billboard that says, "Joe, you should be working with Six and Flow," like outside your office.
Could you do that for yourselves and then sort of say, well, we did it for you and it worked, so now we want to do it for you and someone else?
My ops director would lose her shit if she found out I spent 10 grand on a billboard.
I don't know. I mean,
she is on mat leave though, so catch me if you can.
It sounds like a great idea.
Thanks, Joe. Anyway, yours, number two.
So when I was in university, then the first marketing book I really read was
Love Marketing.
Yeah. Yep. And like that was kind of one of the books that sort of inspired me into my career in marketing. The other thing was a love for social media at the time. And I remember reading that book, and it was by the then chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi, who was since resigned in shame, but it was a good book nonetheless. And it just really inspired a dream to one day work for Saatchi & Saatchi. You know, they were the company who I sort of saw as this pinnacle of advertising, and I thought myself a creative person and stuff like that. So I thought, yeah, I want to work for them one day. And every year they ran an internship, a summer internship, and each year in university I applied, and I never got in. And so it was well, you know, it's one of those things. But after that experience, then you know, I kind of went a different way, and I started valuing different things and stuff like that. But you know, I always had that thing in the back of my mind that Saatchi & Saatchi was one of those companies which was pretty cool. A few years passed, and eventually ended up in a place where I ended up running an event in the Saatchi & Saatchi offices with the then current chairman of Saatchi & Saatchi, speaking at it. And it was just one of those surreal moments. I remember going down, we went down twice, the first to scope out the venue and then the second for the event itself. And I just sort of stood there and I was like, you know, this is mad. You know, I'm in the building I wanted to be in, but I am doing a job that I love more than, you know, more than anything in a sort of professional context. I couldn't imagine a better job. And, you know, it was sort of one of those moments where I was just like, you know, this is the best of both worlds. And really the lesson for me from it, off the back of it, was that even though there was disappointment at the beginning of that particular journey, there was then followed by that, you know, just as a really joyful moment where I was doing things on my own terms, but had ended up at the same destination, which I thought was really cool. I was really proud of that moment.
So funny, because Saatchi & Saatchi has always been the thing that I wanted. Like, it, as in, I wanted to work for Saatchi & Saatchi. So I grew up in New Zealand, and I don't know if you know this about Kevin, but his sister moved over to New Zealand like many, many years ago, and he followed. And that's why there's a big Saatchi & Saatchi presence in New Zealand. And so through the work that my mum did, she was kind of involved with like Saatchi and all that kind of stuff. And it was one of those agencies that has always been that thing that I wanted to work for. So I'm sure I applied for jobs there and all sorts of stuff. And yeah. And when I was doing the PhD, we actually had Kevin come in and talk to us, along with Tom Eislinger, I can't remember, but his job is like the chief tech guy, or was the chief tech guy at Saatchi & Saatchi. So he basically went and played with new tech to figure out what they could do with the cool stuff and then go and build it. So like I idolized it. And then, and now I'm like, yeah, but what if I could build something better? So yeah. That's not some like super arrogant statement of me going, I'm going to be bigger than Saatchi & Saatchi, but what if I can, there's nothing stopping us as a business of going, actually, we could build something that has abs bigger impact for clients, and we could grow it to some big, big kind of globally recognized agency. And that's, but it's funny that both of us had that kind of Saatchi & Saatchi dream.
Yeah. I wonder whether there's anything that sort of meant that we've ended up in very different places, albeit as good friends. So it's interesting nonetheless. I don't know. Those level of companies are aspirational, but I think it's just such a pleasant realization to know that you can create your own path and, yep, as you say, create something that is better. And it may just well be your personal definition of better, but that's enough, you know, and it's pretty cool. Pretty cool moment to be able to do that and to release yourself from aspirations of working for someone else's company and sort of say, you know what, I can take control if I want to here and create something that's pretty cool. A good moment. How about number three for you?
Honestly, I think it's the Six and Flow marketing machine, not from like we generate leads, we sell to those leads, like not that space, but the recruitment side. So we've put a lot of effort, and like recently, and we've gone through fits and starts over the years, but we've put a lot of effort into humanizing the brand, and not just like the brand of Six and Flow, but like the employer brand. And one of the goals when I started the agency is I wanted to create an agency that if I didn't own it, I'd want to work for it. And I think our ongoing efforts with that have, generally speaking, been quite effective with that. So like we have normally a good bank of people who are reaching out to us, want to work with us. People generally know who we are when, like, in the spaces that we want to attract people from. And that's been powerful. But the nice thing about it, so you and I have talked about this countless times, where like the businesses, our businesses, are transitioning from being owner-led in terms of the branding to becoming their own kind of machines behind it. Not just machine, probably the wrong word, but they have their own momentum. And what we've got now is the team driving a lot of those campaigns, the team coming up with the ideas from it. I'm still involved with them if they want me to be, but a lot of it is now driven by team members from a creative perspective. And we're much better at talking about, A, people leaving. So like it always sucks when people leave, but they're quite often leaving for the right reasons. And it took me a long time to realize that we should still be celebrating the ones that leave as well. And that's that. We do that now, and also celebrating the ones who are starting as well. So making sure that people are seeing that, yeah, there is movement, but it's good movement quite a lot of the time.
Nice. That must be such a moment of pride, you know, sort of looking at the team and sort of going, you know, you got it.
Yeah. He must be... Over to you guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know that you speak a lot about building a company that people are proud to work for, but it sounds like through their actions, they're actually demonstrating that, you know, the space that you've created is creating exactly that. It must be so, so lovely.
Positively.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe there isn't a lot more to be said on that, you know, other than, you know, what a cool thing.
What's your number three, Joe?
So my number three is all about the Marketing Meetup Grants that we're launching at the moment, which is a 3-week program that we launched quite recently for folks to come through. And if they have an idea, then we're going to look to support them. And this really is just something that speaks to my heart more than anything. You know, it's something where, like, I'm literally, you know, as part of it, then I, along with the other sponsors, are literally giving away time and money for no other reason than it feels good. And it's not, you know, something to pat ourselves on the back on. It just sort of is a really lovely moment of, you know what, I'm going to choose to grow my company in a way which doesn't have to fit the norm. It doesn't have to be optimized for profit beyond anything else. It doesn't have to be all about corporate sensibilities. It can be built to help people. And I feel like with the Marketing Meetup, then, you know, we always strive to educate and connect people and do it all with kindness. You know, that's the line we use. And people benefit in a very direct way. But it feels like a slightly more indirect route to the words, you know, I'm helping you. Whereas the grants feels like a very sort of direct sort of method of helping someone. And just, you know, for that reason, I feel very, very proud to sort of think we've created that and now it's going to be a thing and it's genuinely going to benefit someone's life. And that's really cool. And really the lesson associated with that, and it's very similar to the Saatchi one, I guess, is that there's a way to sort of create your own career and bring it to a place where you're doing the thing that you want to be doing, you know, beyond any other. For me, that is helping people, and more specifically helping people who want to help themselves. And that's just such a privilege. And I think there is just a lesson there about sort of career development, I guess, which is it doesn't have to be at the whim of someone else. You can create this thing, and even if it's not a quick route to be able to do the thing that you want to be doing, then, you know, you can get to that place, and you can sort of think, this thing that I'm doing, I'm actually really, really pleased that I'm doing it, which has been great. I am feeling proud about that, which is nice.
Nice. Well, I think that, yeah, that pretty much wraps us up, Joe.
Yeah, I think we're good. I've enjoyed that, mate. It's nice. You know,
thanks for showing up this week.
it's nice to be able to take some pride and stuff, and I hope that it's come across in the intended way, which is, you know, just being pleased with stuff rather than showing off. But yeah, we'll see. I enjoy it anyway. Thank you, mate.
Always enjoy, mate. Thanks, and, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Hope you're good. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.